when they say they're getting more efficient, which is how they sort of sell this, is they mean they're firing people. It means you had two grocery stores and now you have one.
What a merger between Kroger and Albertsons could mean for Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 2nd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service hopes to improve relationships with Alaska Native tribes.
We have run into a lot of regulations, and we're still not in harmony with each other.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
It was a busy week in the nation's capital, with the members of Alaska's congressional delegation splitting and uniting in surprising ways. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin is here to tell us about that. Liz, one of the big votes in the Senate this week was to protect same-sex marriage, and both Alaska senators voted for it, but for very different reasons. Can you explain that?
Yeah. First of all, lawmakers began pursuing this bill in earnest this summer when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, taking away the federal right to abortion. At the time, Justice Clarence Thomas said maybe the case guaranteeing same-sex marriage should be reconsidered. So this bill would say that states have to accept as valid marriage licenses issued in any other state, even if they're for same-sex couples. So, you know, as might be expected, Senator Lisa Murkowski voted for it. She's been an advocate of marriage equality for quite a few years now. But Senator Dan Sullivan also voted for it, and that was something of a surprise.
Yeah. Did you have a chance to ask him about that?
Well, I tried to. He doesn't usually stop in the hallways to talk to reporters, and he just kind of slipped right past me. My attempt to get him on the phone didn't work either. But his office issued a statement, and it was really interesting because he made it clear that protecting same-sex marriage was not his goal. Instead, his statement says his support was because the bill, for the first time ever, puts in federal law that churches and religious nonprofits are not required to provide goods or services to conduct or celebrate a same-sex marriage. In his view, and this is from his statement, the bill the Senate passed, quote, is much more about promoting and expanding religious liberty protections than same-sex marriage.
So it sounds like Senator Sullivan supports the bill because it gives churches the right not to respect same-sex marriages.
Exactly. He says he believes questions about who can marry should be left to the states to decide.
Okay, but he voted for the bill, which now goes to the House for passage. Do you know how Representative Mary Peltola will vote on that?
I haven't seen a statement from her specifically on the bill, but equal rights for LGBTQ Alaskans, that was something she campaigned on.
And speaking of Congresswoman Peltola, she kind of went against the flow this week on the bill to impose a labor contract on rail workers.
Yeah, she voted against the bill, which Congress passed to avoid a costly strike among freight rail workers. I talked to her right after the vote, and she said she couldn't support a bill that didn't have adequate sick leave for railroad workers. Here is what she said.
It just seems like a human right, a quality of life issue, to be able to see a doctor, to be able to take a sick day and know that you're not going to lose your job or be severely penalized.
She said that some rail workers have dangerous jobs and need to be at the top of their game. And Casey, while she's telling me this, she was holding her box of Theraflu there in the halls of Congress.
Oh, no. Is she sick or is she just sick of Washington already?
No. She says that she, people in her campaign and her family got super sick, like incapacitated, starting on November 9, the day after the election, with some kind of flu-like illness. And now she's just dealing with some lesser symptoms. And no, she says she does not need a sick day at this point.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. That railroad bill did pass both chambers, though, and we heard members of both parties talk about how important it was to the national economy to avoid a strike. A lot of Democrats probably wanted to take the pro-union side, but they didn't. Is Peltola going to pay a price for defying party leaders on this?
Well, I asked her. She said there was some disappointment expressed to her, but she also said leadership understands that a member has to do what she feels is right. It might have been different if they really needed her vote, but they had plenty of votes, and Peltola said her no was a little bit of a protest vote.
Gotcha. So back to the Senate, how did the senators vote on that railroad strike bill?
Senator Murkowski voted for it. She said a strike would be just too damaging, but she said she did empathize with the workers and their need for sick leave. Senator Sullivan voted against it. He said the Senate just didn't have, you know, enough time to consider it. Here's part of what he said on the Senate floor.
Less than 36 hours ago, we were asked to decide on issues that are complicated, that are important, without necessary deliberations, without congressional hearings to gain knowledge and expertise required to make informed decisions.
So on that bill, we've now got Peltola and Sullivan voting no for different reasons. By the way, Liz, I understand that when Peltola first went to D.C. to be sworn in back in September, there was a ton of national interest in her. I believe her office said they were fielding like more than 100 media requests a day. Is she still in big demand there?
Sure seems like it. This week she was on Meet the Press Now. That's on an NBC streaming channel to talk about the railroad bill. And then she was on CNN kind of representing the new face of the House Democrats. Her spokesman, Josh Wilson, says the invitations to do the national shows aren't, you know, piling up like they were, but the office is still getting more requests than they can accommodate.
Okay, well, that's interesting. And thank you for accepting our request to be on this program. That was Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent, Liz Ruskin. Liz, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Casey.
Grocery store companies Kroger and Albertsons announced a plan to merge in October, but have yet to address questions about how it will affect Fred Meyer and Safeway stores in Alaska. KUAC's Robin reports.
The corporations announced the merger agreement October 14th and produced a joint website, KrogerAlbertsons.com, and brief video statements from the CEOs.
The combination of Kroger and the Albertson companies is a tremendous opportunity to bring together two highly complementary organizations.
Rodney McMullen, Kroger chairman, promised efficiencies and a, quote, world-class shopping experience, unquote. But Alaskans are worried about jobs and the downsides of such a merger. Kroger runs Alaska's Fred Meyer stores, and Albertsons runs Cars and Safeway stores.
And what that means when they say they're getting more efficient, which is how they sort of sell this, is they mean they're firing people. Means you had two grocery stores and now you have one. So you have half as many employees, but all the same customers.
That's Graham Downey, consumer advocate for the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. The two grocers are among Alaska's largest employers. Currently, Safeway stores are unionized and Fred Meyer stores are not. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 1496 has been negotiating with Fred Meyer, but has not commented on that or the merger. Nationally, Kroger is the nation's second-largest supermarket chain. Albertsons is the fourth-largest. Vivek Sankaran, the current CEO of Albertsons, says the new company will upgrade stores and expand the brands they sell.
Together, we'll be able to create a premier omnichannel retailer and provide even more personalized service to customers across the country.
If the deal is allowed, Kroger would buy Albertsons for $24.5 billion, and the new company would be as big as Walmart and Amazon, with nearly 5,000 stores serving 85 million households across the U.S. But in Alaska, where the supply chain is vulnerable, consumers care more about food security. There are some independent grocers in Alaska, niche stores like Roaming Root in Fairbanks, the IGA store in Delta, and the member-owned Co-op Grocery in Fairbanks. there are wholesalers like Costco, and there are also other chains, like Walmart with 10 stores, but not all sell groceries, the Alaska Commercial Company with 33 stores serving rural communities, and the emerging Three Bears chain with 11 stores. But the 12 large Fred Meyer and 35 Car Safeway stores are the major competitors in Kenai Soldotna, Valdez, Wasilla Palmer, Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. They serve more Alaskans in those population centers than any other retailers. In many Alaska towns, like Fairbanks, the Safeway and Fred Meyer stores are across the street from each other. Downey says if the merger goes through, one of those stores would close.
Then you have market power, the power to set the prices. You don't have the competitor across the street making sure you don't have a crazy price on milk or cucumbers. You can pretty much name your price and people are going to have to pay it.
Repeated calls and emails to Kroger and Albertsons corporate offices over the last month were not returned. The merger, planned for early 2024, must first meet antitrust standards. Attorneys general in Washington State, Illinois, California, and the District of Columbia have now filed suits to prevent various aspects of the merger, such as an illegal monopoly that would hurt consumers. Two Alaska legislators have written a letter to the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, explaining Alaska's unique shipping situation and asking them to investigate the potential for price hikes if Kroger and Albertsons merge. ACPERG's Graham Downey says the FTC is starting to look at the effects of such market power.
Prices might be less in the short term, but like long term, what kind of economy are we creating here? Are we creating a diversified economy of lots of local businesses that's keeping money circulating within our state? Or are we making a tiny number of shareholders very rich?
Downey says the Alaska Public Interest Research Group is asking consumers to sign a letter to Alaska's congressional delegation telling them to oppose the merger. On the merger website, the corporations say until the transaction closes, Kroger and Albertsons will remain separate, independent companies. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, donations pour into Stebbins after the community's only grocery store burned.
Food, formula, diapers, wipes, water.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Donations are coming from around the state to help the Northwest Alaska village of Stebbins after the community lost its only grocery store in a fire on Tuesday. Lydia Raymond Snowball, president of the local tribal government, says the city is working on distributing the food and other supplies donated by organizations, including the Food Bank and Kowarik.
Right now, Kowarik is doing donation drop-off, and in which it includes food, formula, diapers, wipes, water, feminine products.
The now-destroyed Anika Stebbins store was the only local source for groceries and fuel in the Yupik community of just over 600 residents. In its absence, Raymond Snowball says community members have had to travel to their neighboring village of St. Michael, about 12 miles away.
Been having to go there to get our stove oil, to get gas, to get some food. And I believe the city of Stebbins, they're doing services for people that have no vehicles making runs for them.
Raymond Snowball says there's still an air of sadness in Stebbins after the loss of the store, but she says she's grateful for donations that have come in from neighboring communities. She says St. Michael officials have discussed donating reindeer meat to Stebbins, and one man has offered to donate shefish he's caught.
We'll be giving them away. He said he'll be going out again today to check his net and bring them here so that we could distribute the shefish, one per household.
There have been no reported injuries from the fire. The state fire marshal's office is still investigating its cause. Marianne Schneider saw her boyfriend shot and killed last month outside of their Anchorage home. Brad Roberts' death is the 24th homicide in Anchorage this year. As Alaska Public Media's Chris Clint reports, Schneider is among the family and friends left grieving sudden loss.
Marianne Schneider stands in the living room of her trailer home, surrounded by boxes filled with clothes, games, and toys. The artifacts of a shared life cut short.
Most of this is just me trying to clear out because I can't look out there without seeing where he died.
Schneider's boyfriend, 23-year-old Brad Robert, was shot and killed outside their trailer home early on November 11th during a fight between three other people. She says he was just trying to help. Police have arrested Anthony Tinker III and charged him with Robert's murder. Schneider is left struggling with his unexpected death, sorting through memories, the court system, and how to move away from a home scarred by his death. She flips through a thick stack of photos, all featuring him.
This is actually of his brother, his stepdad, and his son.
Her favorite? An image of him holding his two-year-old son, Oliver.
Their son actually came out as a stillborn, and it was Brad singing to him that made him take his first breath again.
Robert also bonded with Schneider's 7-year-old son, Justin, over video games. On the night of the shooting, Schneider says she and Robert heard a disturbance outside involving a man and two women. She didn't know the man had a gun, but she saw what happened next.
Brad had stepped outside and was like, it was something along the lines of, this looks like assault to me, and they didn't pay him any attention. So he walked down the steps towards them, and he tried separating the two girls. And that's when the other one started yelling, don't touch her, that's my daughter, or let go of my daughter, something like that. She said that about three times, and that is when the guy shot him.
Schneider ran outside barefoot in the snow, calling 911.
The guy might have been standing about here. They were facing, like, that way.
Police dispatchers asked her to give Robert CPR, but he had been shot in the head and was barely breathing.
But there was no life in his eyes. And when the police finally came, they took one look at him and was like, you can stop now.
Police did not arrest Tinker until 4 days later, and it wasn't initially for the shooting. Officers describe a chaotic series of events that started November 14th. First, they picked up Tinker after someone reported him yelling and having a mental health episode outside. Then, police took him to Providence, Alaska Medical Center's psychiatric unit. He was released hours later. The hospital won't comment on why he was admitted or released, citing patient privacy. Police say Tinker then stole two cars, including the taxi he left the hospital in. He later kicked out residents of an apartment at gunpoint and was arrested the next morning following a SWAT standoff. He was later charged in Robert's murder following police interviews. Schneider says prosecutors have been providing her with updates on the case.
I just couldn't imagine doing something like that. Or anybody doing something like that. I mean, I know it happens every day, obviously, but it's...
Schneider wants Tinker to suffer the same fate as Robert, but she knows there's no death penalty in Alaska.
And a lot of people that know me really well might be surprised by that. I'm typically a lot more forgiving. But it changed a lot of people's lives, what he did.
Tinker faces numerous charges in Robert's death, including first-degree murder. In Anchorage, I'm Chris Clent.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has a draft of its Alaska Native Relations Policy out for public review. As Emily Schwing reports, the agency hopes the new policy will help improve relationships between federal employees and tribes in Alaska.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has had a Native American relations policy in place for more than 6 years. But the agency's Alaska Native-specific policy is still in the works.
So while the Native American policy applies everywhere, including Alaska, we needed to have these unique considerations.
Chief Cook Leonetti is the agency's Alaska Native Affairs specialist.
With ANCSA, ANILCA, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and others that had special Alaska considerations. And really, we needed to point out the uniqueness of the subsistence Alaska Native way of life and the impact that the agency has on that.
The draft policy recognizes the impacts of climate change on Alaska's landscape. It also mentions the inclusion of indigenous traditional ecological knowledge in co-management efforts. The policy will also require Alaska Native relations training and education for Fish and Wildlife Service employees.
That is designed to illuminate the current status of the nutritional and spiritual and cultural connection to living a subsistence way of life, that it is also really important for Alaska Native people to continue that way of life for reasons beyond nutrition.
The relationship between the agency and Alaska Native people hasn't always been amicable. In 2018, the Fish and Wildlife Service and the State Department of Fish and Game issued a joint apology for the impact the Migratory Bird Treaty Act had on subsistence in the 1960s and 70s, when hunting migratory birds and collecting their eggs in spring and summer months was prohibited. Many people had to resort to illegally hunting birds for food. The law was changed in 1997, but even today, some people in Western Alaska are still sensitive when it comes to providing information about how and where they hunt for birds. Elder James Berlin Sr. was born in Nunapichuk in 1944. He says prior to statehood and before the Fish and Wildlife Service set limits, his father kept an eye on their subsistence harvests.
But he watches how much we catch. And if we have enough, he says it's time to stop or slow down. He had all the control.
For Berlin and others who rely on subsistence in Southwest Alaska, it was a system that worked. Berlin didn't get his first fishing license until he was 16, and that was because the state required it. While he hasn't read the new federal policy on Alaska Native relations, Berlin says both user groups and managers need better communication.
We have to start understanding what the laws are for, why they were created. We are the original users of the subsistence fish that we get here on the Kuskokwim. And we have run into a lot of regulations, and we're still not in harmony with each other.
Strained relations between federal agencies and Alaska Natives isn't limited to migratory birds. Chief Cook Leonetti says improving those relationships is central to developing the policy. Since 2016, she's worked alongside a 12-member team of representatives from every region of the state, from the North Slope to Cook Inlet and from Bristol Bay across the interior. Some members come from tribal government. Others represent Alaska Native organizations and corporations.
We wanted to make sure every word and every sentence was agreed upon by the entire group. And if it wasn't, we talked about it until we could agree on the language that made sense for everybody.
The Fish and Wildlife Service will accept public comments on the draft policy until December 5th. Leonetti expects it will be signed and included in the agency's national manual sometime in 2023. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
Among the Iditarod dog mushers to sign up for the 2023 race just before a recent important deadline is Australian Christian Turner. Turner is an unlikely entrant in the 1,000-mile sled dog race from Anchorage to Nome, but not for lack of experience. He's a two-time finisher, placing his highest at 15th in 2015, his last Iditarod. But the idea to run his next Iditarod came rather unexpectedly when Turner saw his friend, three-time champ Mitch Seavey, post a video a couple weeks ago of his dog team looking good, but with the comment that he would not be competing in the next Iditarod.
And I just jokingly messaged him saying, I'll run your team. Literally all I wrote was, I'll run your team. And he private messaged me straight away and said, let's make this happen. So I hadn't thought about it seriously at all. I was just like, oh, I'll just throw that little comment in there. And he wrote back like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, okay, well, now I've got to talk to my wife. I've got to actually be serious about this.
Turner works as a carpenter, but still runs dogs often behind a bike or scooter, and he's a rep for Nonstop Dogwear. So Turner plans to fly to Alaska in late January to get back to dog mushing on snow with CV's Iditarod sled dog kennel. He's now fast-tracking his training, running hills early in the morning near his home in Queensland before the temperature climbs later in the day. It was pushing 100 degrees there recently. But it's the cold temperature in Alaska, like the 50 below he experienced in the 2015 race in Huslia, that's on Turner's mind.
Honestly, that's the thing I'm most worried about. The rest I can sort of fake it until I make it, but the cold, you can't really do that. You can't, you can't work around the cold. You gotta prepare for it. And so I'm hoping that the 4 weeks I'm there, or the little bit over 4 weeks I'm there before the race, will be enough to acclimatize, and you know, all my muscle memory and my my schedules and my systems. I guess it's systems of how to keep yourself warm and what layers to wear when and how and when you're running up the hills and all those types of things.
Still, it's an offer Turner could not turn down. He's run Dallas CV's younger race dogs in the past. This time, it's the best dogs from Mitch, Dallas's dad.
People always ask me, like, because it's such a rare thing, especially in Australia. People always like, oh, are you going to do it again? And my answer to them has always been, oh, I'd do it again if I moved there and started my own kennel, or if I had the opportunity to have an adult team and race professionally and like with a good schedule, like a competitive schedule. And yeah, I didn't actually think that was ever going to happen.
It appears to be happening, and Turner is one of several mushers to sign up for the Iditarod right before the entry fee doubled to $8,000 at the end of November. That includes top 10 finishers Wade Mars and Jesse Royer and 2019 champ Pete Kaiser. The 34 dog mushers currently signed up to run the 2023 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race would still be the fewest in the race's 50-year history. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Robin in Fairbanks, and Wesley Early, Chris Clint, and Emily Schwing in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Emmert, and we're saying goodbye to our producer, Katie Anastas, tonight. Katie, we'll miss you, your uplifting spirit, and all your hard work, but we're looking forward to still hearing your stories now for KTOO in Juneau. So it's bittersweet, but we're proud of you, and thanks for everything you've done here at Alaska Public Media. Anyway, I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
What if accessing your personal and family immunization records was as easy as checking your phone? The Docket app is a secure option that allows Alaskans to quickly access their immunization records. Need immunization records for school or travel? Docket makes it simple and is available for download from the App Store or Google Play Store. Learn more at vaccinationrecords.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.